You're listening to the Bears Brothers podcast and postgame show, the place where Bears fans across the globe hang out online after every Bears game. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Bears Brothers Podcast, and welcome to our first postgame show of the 2018 season as our Bears lost to the Baltimore Ravens in the Hall of Fame game, 17-16, in a game that I'll summarize up in one word. I talked about it at halftime on the Periscope on Twitter. Sloppy. I'm your host, Will DeWitt, and today I am joined by both of my Bears brothers, Brandon Hazlett and Nicholas Moriano. We were in attendance last night, drove an hour back to our hotel, and pretty much crashed instantly as soon as we got back from the long day traveling to Canton, and of course, the long evening of watching preseason football. So we are recording this the morning after. First time ever recording a postgame show the day after a game, which, not going to lie, feels a little weird, but we're here to give you our breakdown like we always promise to do so. So we're going to begin this postgame show like we do every postgame show, and that's going to be with my monster moment. And my monster moment for the very first game of the 2018 season is going to be that final drive by the Bears, well, second to final drive, the 12-play, 92-yard drive when they were down by 7. Tyler Bray led the troops down 92 yards for a score to put the Bears in contention to perhaps win the game. Now, obviously, they failed the two-point conversion, which I believe everyone listening, and I know Brandon and Nick feel the same way, were thankful that the game was decided one way or the other. But regardless, my favorite play out of all that, when it was 4th-and-6 at the Baltimore 20-yard line, and Tyler Bray found Javon Wims for 10 yards to get the first down, that came after what we thought was a Tanner Gentry touchdown. And then that followed up with an actual Tanner Gentry touchdown. And of course, like I just mentioned, the Bears did fail the two-point conversion attempt, but for the Bears to do a little bit of hurry up offense, 2-minute drill, march all the way down the field to at least put themselves in a spot to win, even though it's the third stringers, to me is still a monster moment. And I'm going to hand it over to Brandon now for his stat of the game.
Yeah, so my stat of the game is going to consist of a couple things. Really, just statistically, the Bears won a lot of categories. They won the first downs. They had 19 first downs compared to the Ravens 15. The total yards, the Bears had 276 total yards, the Ravens 194. And then lastly, they also won the passing battle. They had 211 passing yards, the Ravens 81 passing yards. But as we can see, all that kind of goes by the wayside when you can't execute or you have too many turnovers in certain areas of the field, because the Ravens spent a lot of time on the wrong side of the 50, which allowed them to get the 17 points a lot quicker, and the Bears were forced to come back at that point, which is why the statistics, are sort of the way that they are. But just want to throw it out there that they statistically won a lot of the categories. Just failure to execute and turnovers really hurt the team throughout this game.
Exactly. And again, it's going to be preseason, so it goes back to my first word, sloppy. However, if that's a trend that continues throughout the season, even though the Bears are outperforming teams in multiple categories, if they're going to shoot themselves in the foot with turnovers, miscommunications, and those sorts of things, of course, they're going to still find themselves on the wrong side of the scoreboard. But Nick, I'm going to hand it over to you. How are you going to start 2018, with a knack or a knock, or perhaps you're just going to double up and do both?
You know what? Actually, I'm going to start off with a knock, and it's not specifically on the Bears. It's just with what we're going to see throughout the 2018 season. That's the helmet rule. We saw it penalized 4 times last night, and just the way that it was being called, you saw these plays and you're wondering, what's wrong with this? Why is this a penalty? Big play that comes to mind, I think it was number 46 of the Bears in the end zone, hits the guy right in the chest, and looks like it's all shoulder, looks like a clean hit, gets penalized for that. And even when the Ravens were penalized for it, I was wondering, hey, obviously it's going in the Bears' favor, but that's not a penalty. These safeties are going to have a really hard time adjusting to this new rule, and it's going to, obviously, every defensive player is going to have to adjust to it. But again, this is a rule that's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of time just to get used to these players, to have to maybe just slow things down, because again, it's going to cost them 15 yards, possibly being suspended for a game if they keep on continuing to do it. But the knock is just on the rule itself right now. Obviously, it was the first game of the season, but we'll see how the officiating goes for it throughout the season.
Yeah, no doubt. It's really going to be interesting how that's going to transpire. Again, it's game one. We talked about it, I think, beforehand, leading into the game, probably on Periscope, how we had a feeling that the referees are going to try to set the tone, calling this more often than not, making sure that they can kind of get it in the players' heads. And I mean, it's in our heads right now. It's the day after, and it's one of the first things on our minds, how this new helmet rule is really going to change the game and how it's going to affect how players attack, especially on defense. But guys, that's it for our opening segment, and we need to go into our next one, which is, of course, handing out our most valuable Bears around the horn. And I'm going to begin with Javon Wims. He had the 7 receptions for 89 yards on 10 targets, so he caught 70% of the balls that went his way. But it's not really just that, right? You see the yards. He led the team in receptions. He led the team in receiving yards. He led the team in targets. But what I really like, I'm going to go back to my monster moment here about that drive that the Bears went 92 yards to go ahead and put themselves in a spot to win it. Wims had three big catches on that drive, two on third down and one on fourth down, to extend this drive, and of course, which ended in a touchdown. You look at the third and three at the Chicago 15, Wims had an 11-yard pickup. You're looking at a third and five at the Chicago 46, he got a reception for 16 yards. And then at the tail end of the drive, it was fourth down and six at the Baltimore 20. I already talked about this. Bray had a pass over the middle of the field to Javon Wims. He picked up 10 yards, and of course, the following play was a touchdown. So not only did Javon Wims lead the receivers across the board in all statistical categories, he was able to come in clutch three different times on that final scoring drive for the Bears. And for that reason, he's going to be my most valuable Bear. Brandon, I'm going to hand it over to you here. Who's your MVP?
I've got a couple MVPs I want to hand out. Both the second string safeties for the Bears, DeAndre Houston Carson and Deion Bush, I thought they played very solid as a unit. Combined, they had seven total tackles, and DHC had the one interception off the tip pass that hit Michael Joseph in the hands. It hit Rashad Perriman in the hands first, then Michael Joseph in the hands. DeAndre Houston Carson is there to scoop it up for the interception. I thought as a unit, I don't feel so bad if either of those guys have to step in if Adrian Amos or Eddie Jackson aren't able to play. I thought both of them played really solid. Deion Bush was really putting some big hits out there on the receivers. Legal hits. Want to throw that one out there as well. I thought those two just overall, very, very solid game. I really see the improvement from what Vic Fangio was saying in OTAs out of Deion Bush, and that's a positive sign for me.
Brandon, breaking all the rules. As for stat of the game, you give me stats. As for MVB, you give me multiple MVBs. So Brandon's breaking all the rules today. It's all right. It's preseason. I will allow it. But Nick, over to you, MVB.
I'll give you one, and it's going to start. I'm going to go with Kylie Fitz. I thought, you know, just looking at him, he just looks a part out there. Looked fast, was able to drop well in coverage, able to get to the quarterback, one time with the one sack, had four total tackles, but he looked good out there. You know, first preseason action, he had that quick get off the line of scrimmage. That's what we want to see, especially with not a lot of depth at outside linebacker. And anytime Kylie Fitz made a play, Leonard Floyd was there to, you know, congratulate him. And I know we talked about that last night in the Periscope, but it's great to see. But Kylie Fitz, like what I saw in his first game action, want to continue to see that throughout the preseason.
All right. So, yeah, there we go. Defenders for both Brandon and Nick. And I went with Javon Wims for my MVP. So that does it for the first quarter of our post-game show. We're going to enter the second quarter of our show now, which is going to be an offensive breakdown. And Brandon already kind of hit on the stats. The Bears had 276 total yards of offense. Even though they're sloppy, they did find a ways to move the ball. And the offensive line was a makeshift version of itself, of course. That's what you're going to see here in the first game. I think if they would have been able to play a little bit better overall, we would have seen even better numbers from the Bears. But it was still a very conservative attack. You didn't see a lot from them, which again, you don't want to show all your cards here with the extra preseason game at that. But guys, before we go into the position by position breakdowns, any just general thoughts about the offense that you want to let our listeners know? And Nick, I'm going to go to you first.
Like you said, it was very conservative, but again, I thought it would be a little bit more smooth, even though this is Matt Nagy's first game as head coach. He still has, you know, Chase Daniel out there running the offense. I thought it could have been a little bit more efficient, a little bit smoother, but this is the first game of the NFL season, so what can you expect? I just expect a little bit more.
Nick's here wanting a little bit more in the preseason. That's okay. B, over to you. Any big takeaways from the offense?
Yeah, Nagy was saying last night in the press conference, we were listening to it in the car on the way back to the hotel room, that Baltimore threw a lot of stuff at the offense, and that's good for them because they're going to be able to learn from their mistakes and capitalize on it in the future. So that's something that I think that's especially big with the extra week, something that defenses, you know, you may not have, I don't want to say looked at. I would hope that he did a little bit of a scouting report anyway for this offense or for the Ravens defense to give to the offense. But I think that overall it's just a big learning experience. I mean, Nick made a good point that Chase Daniel does know this offense, but when you're getting thrown different looks, you know, it kind of messes with your psyche a little bit.
And let's talk about these quarterbacks first, and let's look at Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray here. Of course, those are two quarterbacks that played. Tyler Bray had the better day of the two. He finished 18 of 34 for 181 yards. He had one touchdown. He didn't throw a pick. He was sacked twice, rating of 78.2. And then Daniel, only completing 50% of his passes, 8 of 16, only 53 yards, averaging only 3.3 yards per throw, one touchdown, but two interceptions. And he was, of course, sacked twice as well for a passer rating of 38.8. So Chase Daniel, let's begin with him because he's someone who he came in, he was a self-proclaimed astute quarterback, very smart, understands his offense. It shouldn't be any learning curve whatsoever for him, but yet he came in there and seemed a little, I wouldn't say lost, but it seemed like he wasn't able to get kind of any flow going with his guys out there. And these are guys that I know he's been practicing with different units throughout training camp. A lot of the guys out there were people that he was practicing with all camp long, and I figured there would be a little bit more chemistry than we saw last night. Brandon, do you agree, or is this what you came to expect from Chase Daniel?
I just want to say that I think knowing the offense and executing the offense are going to be two different things that you have to be able to look at, because Chase Daniel doesn't have a whole lot of game experience. I think we brought up the stat last night. He's thrown like 24 preseason touchdowns. But you don't hardly ever see him in the regular season because he's been playing behind Drew Brees and other quarterbacks of that nature. So therefore, he's not going to get a lot of playing time against the one. So executing the offense and knowing the offense, I think, are two different aspects that you have to consider here. But I think early in the game, they say, you know, football games are decided by one or two plays. I think early on, one of those plays was the drop pass to Benny Fowler in the end zone. I think if he makes that catch, Chase Daniel's got a lot more confidence. Benny Fowler's got a lot more confidence. The chemistry starts to build a lot quicker. Things kind of look up, I think. I don't think that the Bears would have taken that for granted. They would have had that touchdown. I don't think they would have looked back just the way that things would have flowed, because then Chase Daniel was kind of just visibly frustrated throughout more and more of the game. After that second interception, he took his helmet off. Before he even reached the sideline, you could just tell by the look on his face he was not happy. So I think it really comes down to that one of those first plays of the game where Benny Fowler drops that pass in the end zone. As he catches that, I think it's a whole different game for Chase Daniel and the offense.
What about you, Nick? I want to know your thoughts here on Daniel because, you know, at camp we've seen him struggle. We've seen him struggling here. I know it's only week one of the preseason, again, the extra week at that, but how worried are you about the depth behind Trubisky?
I wouldn't say I'm too worried. And again, this was the first preseason game. I think Daniel just expects more out of himself. He's, you know, this is his time to shine. It's the preseason where he's done really well. That's why he's been in the league, 9-10 years now, because of what he's been able to do in the preseason. But we have seen him struggle in practice, but we've seen him be really good in practice, you know, taking those deep shots and in practice and, you know, getting the ball to his guys. It didn't work out for him tonight. He had two interceptions. Like Brandon was saying, just didn't look like he was in the flow of things. But Chase Daniel, a guy that I'm sure will rebound another week of practice, probably an actual game plan, because I don't know if they really do too much game playing for the Hall of Fame game. You don't want to show your cards too much. But I wouldn't say I'm too worried yet. It's one game of football. He played a half, so he didn't even get to play the entire game or anything like that. But he has to make more of his opportunities moving forward for sure.
All right, well, I'm going to go right back to you, Nick. Tyler Bray, what's your biggest takeaway?
Tyler Bray, again, not much better. He had the better stats of the day, but these quarterbacks overall for the Bears didn't really impress me. Again, these guys should have been more fluid in their decision-making. It seemed like they held onto the ball a little bit long, but yeah, Tyler Bray, not much on him. Again, I expected more from the quarterbacks in this game.
All right, yeah, Tyler Bray, you know, when you saw him out there, I think my biggest takeaway is that he had a little bit more zip on the ball than I saw throughout practices. So maybe he's out there in a game situation, he's playing with a little bit more urgency. Other than that, yeah, hard to take away, especially from our vantage point in the stands. Of course, like, you know, we're watching all the different positions, and for me personally, when Tyler Bray's out there, he's not really high on my list of priority players. You know, I'm paying attention to more like how Javon Wims is looking, maybe Ryan Nall when he's out there as well. But B, before we get into those positions, any final takeaways from the quarterback, Bray, Daniel, quarterbacks in whole?
Yeah, I want to add that Tyler Bray was the one that led the 92-yard drive to get the Bears within striking distance of a tie. Glad they went for two as well. But I think that speaks a lot to him as far as being able to lead an offense that far late in the game situation like that. I mean, obviously, we hope that we don't have to see that from him in the regular season. But the fact that he can do it and was able to execute on it, I think, is going to speak a lot.
All right, that wraps up quarterbacks. Let's take a brief look at the running backs because we didn't really get much of a sample size whatsoever. The Bears only ran the ball 19 times, 18 if you take away. They're giving Tyler Bray a run for 0 yards, so we're just going to avoid that one whatsoever. But, yeah, you have Benny Cunningham. He led the team with 6 carries, 37 yards, 30 of which came on one big run early on in the game. Taquan Mizell, he was out there for a short stint, 5 carries, 15 yards. And then Ryan Nall, he had the most carries of the day. He had 7, but was only able to pick up 13 yards. It's an average of only 1.9 yards per carry. Again, I kind of foreshadowed this earlier. The offensive line struggling not only in pass protection, but also generating much, you know, running lanes, many running lanes throughout the game. Kind of led to not having much sample size here. And, of course, the Bears were playing from behind in the second half, so they kind of aired it out more. That's why you see Bray having 34 attempts compared to Chase Daniels, 16. But, B, I'm going to go to you. Any takeaways from the Bears running backs that we should have our listeners know about?
Yes, looking at the running backs, I mean, Benny Cunningham, there was one run that he had early in the game where Nick and I both kind of looked at each other like he had a big hole there in the middle and he ended up bouncing it outside. So that's something that's kind of worried me. He's a guy that kind of worries me through camp as far as his performance. He hasn't quite lived up to what I thought he would be, or at least what he looked like last year. But he was a captain, so that kind of speaks to where I think he stands on the team. Ryan Nall, just, I don't know, there's a lot of hope and optimism around him, I think. But I just didn't see a lot. He's a power back, but you just don't see the kind of production that you need out of his type of player, I guess, but he also didn't have many opportunities to capitalize on that because by the time he got in there, the Bears were trailing. They had to be able to get down the field. So really as a whole, not much to take away.
Yeah, Ryan Nall, I think every time he grabbed the ball and he was running up the middle, he just got swallowed up real quick. I mean, again, less than 2 yards per carry. Nick, anything you want to add here on Bears running backs?
The only thing here is that obviously the Bears running backs didn't do very much in this game, but a guy that, you know, you would like to see something from is Taquan Mizell, not even in the running game, but in the passing game, because that's the only way I think he makes this team, is if the Bears see him as a viable option out of the backfield just for a passing option. He didn't have any receptions. I don't even know if he had any targets in this game. So you want to see that maybe in the second preseason or throughout the preseason. Are the Bears going to throw it to him? And that's the only way I think Mizell would make this roster.
Yeah, again, very quiet day for the running backs. Switching over to wide receiver, I've already talked pretty much in length on Javon Wims and what kind of day he had and why he was my MVP. Clutch catches, contested catches at that, someone who had really strong hands, really sticky fingers, able to go up there and grab the ball 70% of his receptions. I mean, 70% of his, he caught 70% of his targets last night. DeMarcus Ayers is right behind him, 5 catches, 46 yards. But Ayers, he also had a few different mistakes throughout the day. We're calling him Ayers, if that comes across through my vocal cords. I'm going to go over to Nick first here. Any just big takeaways? We can lump in tight ends here as well. Just in the passing game, anyone who stood out, didn't stick out, and that you're worried about, just wherever you want to take it.
So we saw Josh Bellamy out there on that first drive where the Bears were driving there, and I think it was a third down situation. He makes a good grab and is able to convert that move the chain. So Josh Bellamy, again, showing up sometimes. And we see that. We saw that in training camp, and you wonder why he's out there. But he has gotten a little bit better since, obviously, when he got to the Bears. And a guy that I've been vocal about who did not show up in the passing game or any aspect of this game last night is Deion Sims. You know, only played 16 snaps, but in those 16 snaps, he really didn't perform very well. There were times where he's just, you know, shortening his arms, not extending out to grab a ball. And I think that's what led to one of the interceptions for Chase Daniel. Again, not blocking, but just Deion Sims in general. I don't know. In training camp, he looks slow as a route runner. We saw that last night, and he only played 16 snaps, so it worries me that there's a lot of money invested in this guy, and you're going to have to put him in the game just because, what, are you going to leave that money on the bench? Well, Nagy might have to do that if he sees that he's not a viable option in this passing game, but we'll see if he, you know, is able to impact any other preseason games, but he's playing in this game for a reason. Obviously, Trey Burton and these other guys are not playing because they have their spots solidified. Not saying that Deion Sims is going to get cut, but he obviously needs to show something to his coaching staff that he can perform in games.
So yeah, Deion Sims, only 16 snaps. You would think he would have a little bit more urgency, a little bit more fire, you know, under his belt because he's someone who he needs to prove himself to this offense. He's someone that Coach Nagy has been vocal about saying, like, yeah, we can find a role for him. And then he goes out there yesterday, doesn't execute in a lot of areas of his game, and it really makes you wonder whether or not he can actually have a role in this game. And, Brandon, I want to go to you because another tight end kind of maybe slightly disappointed me. Adam Shaheen only had the one target. He only played like 11 plays, 11 snaps throughout the game. And I know it wasn't a big sample size, but he was out there for, again, like only 10 snaps. But I thought I would have seen a glimpse of Adam Shaheen. Are you surprised that he wasn't at least able to put, you know, a catch out there? I know they target him once, but I'm surprised it only went his way maybe once. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised as well. There were a couple times in the red zone where I think we were all kind of anticipating it going to Adam Shaheen, but the one pass to Michael Burton was nice. It's a pass that we'd seen in camp where he runs a little angle route, I guess, and then cuts back in, wide open every time, four-yard touchdown pass there to Michael Burton, the fullback. You guys touched on Javon Wims. I hope that we see him bump up to the second strings before the next preseason game. He's really impressed me. Tanner Gentry, nine targets, three receptions, technically two of them for a touchdown, but only one for a touchdown. He was, I don't know, I don't want to skew his stat line by saying he was targeted nine times, because I feel like a lot of those were ones that were sailing out of bounds or the pass was short, especially later in the game when Tyler Bray was trying to bring us back down the field one more time. We've seen a couple passes to Tanner Gentry just fly into the sidelines. I don't know if that was intentionally to be thrown away. Didn't really look like it, but it could have been. And then I touched on Benny Fowler. He had four targets, two receptions for 11 yards, but the two drops that he had, the one in the end zone and then he had one on the sideline, just very big noticeable drops for me, because I thought Fowler was going to be a guy. I'm not saying he's going to get cut. There's still a lot of time left in the preseason. But it's really disappointed me to see that, because he was a guy that I thought could take Josh Bellamy's spot. But if Josh Bellamy's going to keep playing the way that he is, you know, I have no issue with him staying on the team at the moment. But Benny Fowler is a guy who I thought, you know, would definitely be a lock to make the team. And after this game, it's looking real shaky for me.
Yeah, let's just kind of take this big picture here, because we know how the top of the order is going to be for the Bears wide receivers with Allen, Gabriel, looks like Kevin White as well. He didn't have to suit up yesterday and play, so I think that kind of shows you where Kevin White stands with this coaching staff. Someone tweeted back, because I tweeted that out, and said, well, obviously he's going to make the roster. And yes, I think we all know he's going to make the roster with the amount of money that he's guaranteed, but there's a difference between making the roster and not having to go out there and play the first preseason game. It kind of shows, like, you've proven enough in camp that we don't need to risk you going out there. And, of course, with Kevin White, of course, having him out there is probably a good thing to have. You don't want to risk him being on the field any more than he has to be, especially if you do have a spot for him in this offense throughout the season. But, yeah, looking at this big picture, Josh Bellamy or Benny Fowler, Nick, I want to go to you, because I know throughout the entire offseason we all wanted, you know, Fowler to be that guy to uproot Bellamy. But throughout camp, and even last night, it's really seeming like Joshua Bellamy, you know, he's a good special teamer, but he's also looking more and more like a wide receiver, and maybe this offense is one that can tailor to him if he needs to be out there to be at least a reliable asset in the passing game. Maybe not the most reliable, but maybe even more so than Fowler, especially with that drop in the end zone last night. But between the two, who do you think is leading?
Oh, I have to definitely go with Bellamy, and we've seen it in training camp. He's running with the ones, and, you know, he made a couple catches last night, and he's gotten better. It's not like he's the same Bellamy from the very first year. Yeah, he's still dropping passes, but he has gotten better with his route running. He is open. You just don't know if he's going to catch it every time. But Bellamy has gotten better. He's been repping with the ones, and like you said, you would hope he's not actually out there in game time, but he's an option. He's going to know the offense, know the right route to run in specific time, specific area for Trubisky to throw to. But yeah, I'll definitely have to give it to Bellamy right now, because he's the one who's shown more, and he's got more of those practice reps and more of that chemistry right now with Trubisky than Benny Fowler does.
And lastly, in terms of the wide receivers, tight ends in this group, I just want to talk about Colin Thompson real quick. He's someone in camp who has, you know, surprised some people, including myself, coming up with a really nice catch. He's someone who is last year at Temple only had like three receptions for the entire season. Didn't really know how he was going to fit in this team. Had a pretty strong camp to start off, but then last night he only had two catches on five targets, but I think those three balls that he didn't haul in were drops. So Colin Thompson, someone who has stood out in practice but came game time, wasn't able to really perform like I thought he would with those drops. So, again, tight end's going to be a very tight race. But with Thompson, with performing like that last night, he's going to really have himself in a tough spot making this team. If that kind of continues throughout the preseason, he's definitely going to be on the outside looking in. But guys, before we move on to the Bears defense, any final thoughts on the offense that you haven't hit on yet? And B, I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah, Rashad Coward and Jordan Morgan played 100% of the snaps on the offensive line last night. And I think really Rashad Coward just needs time. There were times where he looked really, really good, like he could be a dependable swing tackle. And then there were times where he just didn't move his feet and he'd give up a sack. Jordan Morgan, kind of the same way. They both just need time, and I think that's why they got 100% of the snaps. Both definitely need to work on their run blocking because we didn't see much out of the running game really at all last night. So that's something I'd like to see the backup offensive lineman improve on is run blocking.
Again, who knows exactly how much of their actual scheme in terms of running they were showing last night. They could have just, you know, picked a hole and went for it, not trying to show all their combination blocks or different zone schemes as well. But no, good call, Mr. Trenches, to make sure we didn't forget about the Bears' offensive line. Of course, it's a unit in the preseason, regardless of the backups, the third strings that may have got overlooked. They got overlooked by me. I just glanced right over offensive line in my notes. So, Nick, any final thoughts on the offense? You could take this line. You can take a big picture wherever you want to go, man.
Yeah, I'll go big picture, and I'm just curious to see how these quarterbacks rebound. And obviously, I think we'll see Trubisky in the second game against the Bengals on Thursday night. So, want to see how, you know, Chase Daniel, Tyler Bray, you know, another game, are they going to make the most of their opportunities? And then when Trubisky gets in there, hopefully we see this offense more fluid, able to, you know, have that 92-yard drive that Tyler Bray did, but, you know, end it with a touchdown. So, and maybe a win if it has to come to that. But, yeah, I'm curious to see how these quarterbacks play in the second preseason game against the Bengals.
Awesome stuff, guys. So up next, we're going to go ahead and break down the Bears' defensive performance. Before we do, I want to ask you a quick favor. And that's if you love the show, you like what we do, I don't care if you found us 2 years ago, 1 year ago, a month ago, or a week ago, or if this is your first time, just leave a review of our show on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out. You know, we're an independent production. We're not backed by any like media entity. We do this all on our own. And every time we get a review, it does help us reach more fellow Bears fans. So please help us out if you can. If you like the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and iTunes. And of course, every time we reach a 50 mark, so we're coming up to 250, we're just trying to find a way to do fun little giveaways to show our appreciation for you taking the time, listening, and of course, reviewing our show. So definitely help us out with that if you can. But getting back to it, guys, let's talk about the Bears' defense here because they were a unit right before kickoff. I was looking at both of you and I said, the Bears' defense, I'm not worried about, especially the second strings, second and third string. I know the defense has a lot of depth on it, a lot of people who've been within the system as well, people who can step in and play. And I think we saw that yesterday, especially early on with the Bears' secondary. You had Deion Bush making plays. DeAndre Houston Carson made a play with that interception as well. They did a great job on third down, only holding the Ravens a 4 of 16. They found ways to get off the field. I think they only allowed less than 3 yards per play for the entire night, which in a preseason game where, you know, there's a lot of pieces just kind of, you know, being plugged and chugged all over, I think only allowing 2.9 yards per play is pretty damn good if you ask me. But B, I'm going to go over to you. General thoughts about the defense before we get into player and position specifics.
Yeah, they held the Ravens to 17 points, which is enough for the offense to win a ball game. And that's coming from second and third stringers, and a lot of those guys I feel confident in. If they were to play against ones, I don't necessarily want all the second stringers to go in there and play against ones, obviously. But this is a group that I overall felt very, very strong about. Wasn't overly worried. John Timu had a bad series in there, but outside of that, that was the only noticeable blunder from my notes that I had throughout the game. But overall, I thought this defense looked incredibly strong, like we've seen throughout all of camp.
Okay, so not only did they give up 17 points, the first score that they gave up at the game was a decent drive, 8 plays, 77 yards. But since that point, the Bears, they gave up a field goal, but that was after an interception, which the Bears on that drive pushed, they pushed Baltimore back 4 yards. So they had negative 4 yards on that 3-point drive. And then in the second half, they had a 6-play, only 36-yard drive that ended in a touchdown as well, which came after a Bears fumble, which, again, this is something we saw last year. The Bears offense having turnovers and the Bears defense having to suffer as a result. Even though they're playing good, they don't have to give up a ton of yards to give up points. So, yes, the Bears gave up 17. I think really the Bears defense gave up 7 and the Bears offense gave up 10. So, again, the defense was strong all night long, really had the Baltimore offense in fits all night long. And speaking of fits, he had a pretty good game as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, let's hand it over to Nick for his thoughts about the Bears defense.
Yeah, well, and you said it perfectly. Even though the Bears' defense was put in bad situations throughout the game, they're able to make the most of it. Even, you know, whether giving up a field goal or whatever it was, they still hunkered down, was able to, like you said, push the Ravens' offense backwards at one point. So that's what we saw last season. That's what we've seen this second string, third string defense play well against the first unit in training camp against the Bears' offense. So it was a unit, like you said, we weren't too worried about them. You want to see some guys make plays, and some did, and we'll definitely get into that, but thought they had a very good night overall.
Oh, I'll add one more good thing that the Bears defense did as a unit in terms of like one certain instance, and it was in the second quarter when the Bears drove all the way down to Baltimore's 28, and Ryan Nall was 4th and 1. He didn't get it. He went back a yard, so Baltimore took over at the 29. 2 plays later, the Bears come back with an interception. So it's something that, of course, the Bears' offense turning it over on downs, and the defense counters that with an interception. And how did the offense repay the defense? With a fumble after 4 plays. So, again, complimentary football has been something we've been missing here in Chicago. We saw that yesterday. But the Bears' defense, I just want to mention, after the Bears' offense fumbled, 3 plays later, the Ravens were forced into punt. So the Bears' defense came back out there, forced a 3-and-out. So interception, Bears fumble, came back with a 3-and-out. So the Bears' defense really played well, given the fact that they weren't put in many great situations throughout the night. So for me, again, the Bears' resiliency on defense, able to turn bad situations, maybe not entirely into good situations, but making the most of what they are given all night long, I think is my biggest general takeaway. But guys, let's look at some position-by-position specifics here, and let's begin with the defensive line. And I think it's appropriate to begin with a position battle between Roy Robertson-Harris and John Bullard. Both were out there last night. Both are, of course, on full display, as this is probably the most pure roster battle we have right now on this team. Who's going to win that starting defensive end job opposite of Akeem Hicks? Of course, both are going to play vital roles in the defense regardless, but who's going to become the starter? Who stood out to you last night? And Nick, I'm going to go to you first about your thoughts between Roy Robertson-Harris, John Bullard. Both stood out for different reasons last night, but who had the better night?
I'm definitely going to go with Jonathan Bullard. I think even though he didn't have too many plays, and you expect him to have more just being, if he's going to be the starting caliber defensive end opposite of Akeem Hicks, he should be able to show more against these second string, offensive linemen or whatever they are. But Jonathan Bullard was able to, get in the backfield a little bit more than I saw Roy Robertson-Harris. Honestly, Harris, to me, had a pretty quiet night. Didn't see any flashy plays from him, but I don't know if you guys saw it differently, but I'm definitely going with Jonathan Bullard for the guy that stood out between them.
I think I saw it slightly differently. There's one play where Bullard was in pursuit going to the sideline. I've mentioned this in years past. He's in pursuit, but I feel like he's jogging a little bit. I feel like I know he has a little bit more speed to him. He's known for his quick get-off, but on top of that, he's not the slowest guy on the field when he's out there, but sometimes he looks like it, and that's a problem. And again, I'm not on the sideline. I don't know him personally, but when I'm watching him, there's just plays that I feel like he could have given a little bit more effort. And when you're trying to go out there and win a starting job, I want to see 110%. I don't want to see, if that's your 100, fine, but give it a little bit more. He's like, he's not even like pursuing down. He's like, his back straight up, his not, didn't look like he was even going to be attacking. Whoever the quarterback was at the time, either it be Griffin or Jackson, was, of course, running towards the sideline anyway, so you don't want to hit the guy. But at least, force him out of bounds maybe a yard or two sooner. But for me, that's just one instance. And again, that was the only play I saw him doing that. But again, I just want to mention I did see it. On the flip side, Roy Robertson-Harris, you mentioned you didn't say anything flashy. I'll agree with that. I think his sack, came off a bull rush. So you see his strength, which I think that's something with Robertson-Harris that we want to see, though. We want to see he has his strength because he's long, he's athletic, he's quick. But if he can win with his strength, then that's just going to set him up for using power moves and, of course, finesse moves throughout the season, because if you're only a one-trick pony, offenses are going to cater to that. But now you're showing you can win in multiple ways. They're not going to know how really to defend you on any given down, which, of course, will benefit him and the Bears defense as a whole. But other than that one play, I will admit it was a very quiet day overall for Robertson-Harris. And B, I know Nick and I hit both sides, so you're the tiebreaker. What do you got?
Well, you're not going to like my answer here. It's a position battle, and it was a tight one at that, because both guys had, well, combined they had 3 tackles, and all tackles were for a loss. Both of them had a sack. The difference is John Bullard had the extra tackle for a loss, so I guess that's who you give the edge to in a tight position battle like that. I don't know. John Bullard, he looked good to me. the one play that you mentioned where he was kind of jogging, he was kind of out of it. I could understand, but you know, you'd like to see a little bit more effort, especially because there's going to be guys playing behind him. They're going to give it everything that they have because they want to make the team. Bowler needs to put that same respect into it as well. But that, like you said, Will, that was just one instance. So if I were to, if I'm going to break the tie, I'm going to say Bullard. But frankly, they're both on the same playing field right now.
All right, so that's for the premier position battle. I'm looking one at the bottom of the roster in terms of defensive end as well. And that's going to be between Bilal Nichols and Nick Williams. Nick Williams, someone who throughout training camp has quietly impressed. You're not going to read any articles about him or hear him too much. If you're listening to the podcast, I'm sure you've heard his name a couple of times by now. And of course, Bilal Nichols, our fifth-round pick out of Delaware. He's been very quiet in camp, but he did finish last night with four tackles, including one sack, which, you know, was a nice play to see because throughout camp, he's had one play that stood out to me, which was a batted pass when he got up and was able to swat a ball down. But here he actually comes away with a sack. And again, he's going up against third stringers, but right now that's what he is as well. So he's beating the competition that he's going up against. But Nick Williams is a guy, like I've mentioned, he's quietly impressing. He too had a sack. He had three tackles on the day. But he's someone who, when he's out there, I feel like he can be a very valuable backup in this league and on this Bears team. He's someone who he has experience throughout the NFL. He's been around the league for a while, and I feel like Vic Fangio is someone who can get the most out of a Nick Williams. So he's a smart player, savvy, and I really think he can be a very sound backup behind Akiem Hicks or Roy Robinson-Harris and, of course, John Bullard, which, again, puts Bilal Nichols in an interesting spot. I mean, I don't think you can put him on the practice squad as being a fifth-round pick. I mean, you could, but, I mean, that puts a lot of potential to lose a fifth-round pick, which, of course, is that would be detrimental for your draft class, honestly, especially if you believe he can develop into what's to come. But we'll see how it all pans out between those two guys, Nick Williams, Bilal Nichols. Did you like what you saw last night? Because I sure did.
Yeah, and especially from Bilal Nichols, because I know he's going to get more opportunities, because we've seen that before with the rookie classes, that they do get playing time throughout the season. So Bilal Nichols is definitely going to be able to show more of what he's capable of. And he showed a little bit last night, which is, you know, encouraging for, you know, obviously pace in the Bears organization. But you want him to be that guy that can definitely step in, even if a Bullard, Akiem Hicks, just give them a little bit of a breather, because we know that they didn't get enough of that last season. But Bilal Nichols, I liked what I saw from him. Again, that sack, able to get into the backfield, just being in that opportunity to make that play itself is good for him, getting this first NFL action. So Bilal Nichols, expect to see more from him. We're definitely going to throughout the preseason, but you know, throughout the season, I would not be surprised, because rookies have made it onto the, you know, the actual game field throughout the regular season in years past.
What about you, B? Anything else on this defensive line discussion that you want to add, either on Nichols, Williams, anyone else?
Yeah, I like what Nick Williams brings to the field itself. He brings a lot of passion, a lot of fire. After the play, there were a couple times the offensive lineman still has his hands on him, pushing him around a little bit, and he's not taking it. I mean, he fires back, and that's something that I think he possesses that I didn't see much out of Bilal Nichols. I mean, I wasn't paying as close of attention to Nichols. But when Nick Williams had that sack, right afterwards, the next play, they're fighting in the trenches, the whistle blows, the offensive lineman Nick Williams are still kind of going at it, jawing back and forth with each other. That's something that I like that Nick Williams brings, and I think that's going to be able to get him in the rotation. Probably not as much, but I think it's a possibility that we could see him on the field a little bit during the regular season.
Let's bounce this outside, and let's talk about the outside linebackers, because last night we had two on display, sixth-round pick Kylie Fitts, and, of course, Isaiah Irving, last year's preseason standout, doing it again. I think Fitts took a little while to warm up. He was out there. He wasn't making any plays, but I think he was just kind of getting a feel for the game. And once the second half hit, he kind of started to take over, making, you know, impactful plays, getting into the backfield, putting pressure on the quarterback. You know, had us high-fiving a few times in the second half, which, of course, is good. And Fitts is someone who, I mean, we need everybody we can at the rotation outside linebacker. Still no Aaron Lynch. Leonard Floyd has never put together a full season as well. So every capable body in this rotation is vital for this season. But Fitts and Irving last night, I think both proved that they can be those guys, which, of course, coming into the season was a huge question mark at the position. B, I'm going to go to you first here between Fitts and Irving. You don't have to say who had a better day. I mean, you could. I think both had really strong nights. But what did you see from them, and how does it make you, how does that kind of affect your confidence at outside linebacker moving forward?
Yeah, both had had really good days, in my opinion. One thing that we were sitting there in the pregame talking about, oh, we got to go against RG3, Robert Griffin III, and Lamar Jackson, both guys who are known to have legs. How well can they contain? And we've seen it early. Kylie Fitz, he's out there in space on a, you know, trying to contain RG3 on a RPO that Griffin kept, and he's just kind of out there on an island, and he didn't pursue him too hard that he was going to get beat, but he didn't give up any ground either. RG3, I think he might have picked up 8 yards on that scramble, but he didn't give up anything. He didn't give up the first down. You know, he didn't get burned on anything, so I thought that was a very solid sign of what was things to come. And both those guys, Irving and Fitz, just did a very good job containing. They didn't get beat. Lamar Jackson had one where he kept the ball on an RPO, and I think it was Irving that was in there and wrapped him up in the backfield right away. Real nice to see. So both guys had very strong outings. Irving, the one sack that he had, just blew past the offensive tackle that was guarding him. I mean, he didn't even get a hand on him. I don't know what the offensive tackle was doing. He just didn't move his feet, which was really kind of funny because, like I've said throughout camp, if Irving can win the point of attack, he's going to go back there and get the sack. And there was one point where he did jump off sides. They flagged him for it. But he was back there because he won the point of attack despite realizing, oh, crap, I'm past the line, got back, and then was able to go again and still get the sack. So I think that speaks to what he can do if he wins the point of attack. He needs to be able to continue to do it successfully, though.
Yeah. Again, outside linebacker, I believe, is a very interesting position, and it's one that last night both guys showed up in different ways as well. But, Nick, I want to know your take on these two. Irving, Fitz, just takeaways in general. Go for it.
Yeah, so with Irving, it just seemed like he was more familiar with that defense. I know Vic Fangio said before last season he just didn't know exactly what he had to do. Even though it was only one preseason game, he looked like he knew what he was doing out there. Able to contain, just look bigger, he looked like he can play that position well. And like you said, Brandon, he was able to contain. I saw a spin move from him trying to utilize that to get to the quarterback. So Isaiah Irving, a guy that's, you know, taking that little step up from that rookie season now, Vic Fangio season number 2 with the defense, so good for him. And then Fitz, too. I liked what I saw, not just from getting after the quarterback. I saw him drop back in coverage a couple times, and we know Vic Fangio likes to do that with his outside linebackers. I think it was one of the halfbacks that went on a little wheel route. Kylie Fitz was right there, covered him really well, and had that ball been thrown that way, Kylie Fitz would have been in a perfect position to either bat the ball away, interception, whatever it was, but he was in position. So I like that from him. And again, just the get off that he's showing, and he just looks like he fits the position. He passed the eye test for sure. Just looks like a big dude. So Kylie Fitz, I'm really excited to see what he can do throughout the preseason. And, you know, with how thin the Bears are at outside linebacker, he's definitely going to get some playing time throughout the regular season. Just has to stay healthy. That's a big thing.
You mentioned it. Fitz is a big dude. He's probably not the fastest guy out there. I mean, okay, he isn't the fastest guy out there, but he's sneaky quick. And I think that's a good thing, because it's going to get overlooked in the game plan. And when that happens, you can be able to beat people with your quickness, either being getting after the quarterback or, like you said, in his coverage, because you're right. He did look pretty sound in coverage, and Vic Fangio uses those outside linebackers in coverage more than maybe we would like. But, I mean, it's Vic Fangio. I trust him. So if that's what he wants to do, go for it, Vic. But let's look at the inside linebackers, because John Team is the one I'm kind of like eyeing in here, because early on, there's the one drive, Brandon, you mentioned it already, where he didn't really perform up to the standard that we're used to seeing out of John Timu. He looked a little bit slow in coverage, unable to keep up with this guy. And of course, with Timu, his lack of athleticism, his lack of, you know, speed, his agility, his ability to move in space is always been his biggest knock. Because other than that, he's a pretty sound linebacker. He's smart. He's instinctive. He does have a knack of making plays on the ball and getting turnovers. We saw it years ago in preseason. That's why he's still sticking around on this Bears roster. But I think it kind of showed that, you know, we still don't have Roquan Smith. That's a discussion for another podcast. Danny Trevathan, he's working his way back. Obviously, you're not going to see him out there yesterday. On Monday, the last practice I was at, he was out there practicing a little bit. So, you know, he's trending in the right direction. But I want to know, what do you guys think about the depth at inside linebacker besides, of course, those two, and of course, Nick Kulkowski, who didn't have to give it a go yesterday as well, but John Timu was out there, Anderson was out there, Josh Woods was out there as well. Wait, is Woods inside or out?
He's inside.
That's what I thought. Well, when you get down to preseason, first game, You just have to make sure, I want to make sure I'm giving you the right information here. So yeah, they're all out there, but what's your thoughts about the depth here? Because I'm slightly worried, but not overly concerned.
See, the thing is, I would be worried if, again, a injury happens to a Danny Trevathan, who has been prone to injuries throughout, you know, his career. You have to plug in Nick Kukowski. Obviously, at some point, they're going to get Roquan Smith in there playing inside linebacker. But John Timo does know this defense. He didn't have a really good game last night. And to add to the things that he didn't do, there was a play Brandon was talking about. Isaiah Irving did jump off sides. He ends up causing a fumble. The ball's right there to grab. John Timo's in pursuit. Nobody's near him. And even though the play wouldn't have counted, completely misses the ball. That's an opportunity for him. Hey, look, I can create a turnover, can, you know, recover a fumble, even though it wouldn't have counted. Look, you're in the position to make it, and he still doesn't. So John Timo, we've said it before, and even at training camp, I don't know why we were talking about it, but the discussion was, what if Timo had all the athletic traits, was bigger, faster, strong? He'd be a good linebacker. But he doesn't have those. So he has to make do with what he has. And, you know, last night he just looked a step slow in coverage, wasn't in the right spots. But he did have, I think it was a fumble that he caused, right, on the tackle? Or so a little bit of a redemption there. But you want to see more out of Timo, who's shown plays, you know, in regular season games. But am I worried about it? A little bit, especially if an injury does happen to a Danny Trevathan, who is going to be a leader on this defense. So that's what I would worry.
All right, and B, how about you? Inside linebacker thoughts before we move on to the Bears secondary.
See, I think they're still pretty deep. They had John Anderson listed as an outside linebacker. It's a chance to try and get him on the squad because they knew how deep they were with Roquan, which we'll talk about another time if something doesn't happen here soon. Danny Trevathan, Kwiatkowski, and Timu, that's why they moved Anderson to the outside, but then he ends up playing inside last night because they didn't play three of them. So even if they keep John Anderson, I mean, I'm not overly worried. Timu is smart enough that he's going to be able to command the huddle and call the plays. John Anderson just has to go out there and execute, and he did. He led the team in tackles last night. He had 10. So that speaks to me as far as how deep they are. I would rather not have John Anderson and John Timu out there playing if we can avoid that at absolutely all cost. But I think the bottom half of this inside linebacker group is going to be tough because it's going to be, you know, do you want John Timu, who's reliably smart, just lacks the athleticism to be able to pick up that fumble, was a step late in coverage just on the one series. He was able to bounce back, I thought, because we didn't see any blunders from him after that. John Anderson didn't even hardly recognize he was out there because he was just out there making tackles. No big issues there. So, I mean, I think this is a solid group. I'm still more worried about the pass rush compared to the inside guys, if I'm going to make a comparison there.
Brandon's worried about the pass rush in a game in which the Bears had 8 sacks and 8 quarterback hits. So there's that. But let's move on to the Bears secondary. Of course, the Bears had 2 interceptions, one from DeAndre Houston Carson, the other from Doran Grant. I think between the two, maybe I'm slightly more excited about what I saw out of Carson. Not only was the interception, there was a few times he made some really nice tackles. And when he's out there, he is not the biggest guy out there on the field. And to see him coming in, making some tackles, he was 3rd on the team. He did have 5, 4 of which were solo. He had the pass deflection on top of the interception as well. So for me, DeAndre Houston Carson was a pleasant surprise. He's been out there playing with the twos a lot throughout training camp. He hasn't made a ton of plays in camp, but when he comes out here in a game situation and stands out at least a few times throughout the game, that's encouraging for a guy who was, you know, a 6th-round pick. He's been working his way through practice squad, you know, biding his time, developing, learning the system. And he looked pretty, you know, confident out there with his responsibilities. So DeAndre Houston Carson, as Brandon put it. You know what, Brandon, you can say it. It's your saying, so you can do it.
Yeah, I wish we had like a live broadcast during the game because I went, spoiler alert, DeAndre Houston Carson's going to get a turnover right here. And that's when he got his interception, was after Chase Daniel threw his first one. But yeah, I gave my MVBs to the second string safeties for a reason. 7 combined tackles, the 1 interception from DHC. I thought just that these safeties as a whole played very, very well. And that even includes the 3rd stringers. DeAndre Hall, I thought, played a pretty good game as well. I mean, like you said, DHC, he's not the biggest guy out there, but he played more like a William than a Mary last night.
There it is. That's what I was waiting for. That's what I was waiting for. Nick, over to you. Any thoughts about the Bears secondary they want to go? Any players that maybe we haven't mentioned that you want to discuss? I know, of course, we saw out there Jonathan Mincy, a little bit more of, Michael Joseph as well. Anyone stand out for good or bad there?
Well, I'll just talk about the group as a whole. At one point in the game, I think I asked you guys, has these Ravens quarterbacks completed a pass to the wide receivers at any point? And I don't think they did. And, we've seen that in practice where these DBs are just dominating, the Bears wide receivers are able to cover them. And that's, from, the first stringers all the way to third stringers. So, this secondary unit is a very cohesive unit and just plays well off of each other, very has that great chemistry. But we saw Craven LeBlanc there. You didn't see any of these guys get beat on coverage wise. They sticked with their man. So yeah, they played really well last night. And I mean, it's nothing new because, like I said, we've seen it in training camp where these DBs are just able to stick onto their guys. And again, Marcus Cooper's also in there, even though he's in there for a reason, but he was able to do, fairly well against second and third stringers, probably what he's best to. But again, yeah, the DBs did play well last night.
Yeah, they did. And you talked about it. Like, what did the Ravens wide receivers do? Because the player who had the most receiving yards, which was 23, all came on one catch, was Gus Edwards. He's a running back. The guy who had the most receptions, 3, only 14 yards. Hayden Hurst, he's a tight end. Rashard Perriman, I'm looking here, he did have 2 catches for 19 yards. But other than that, I mean, nobody else had multiple catches. Well, Tim White did. So he had 3 guys who were able to get multiple catches. And the most damage anyone did was 20 yards total. So that kind of shows you, even though they were allowing a few catches, I mean, they're getting wrapped up rather quickly, not able to bust any big gains. And other than that, when you're looking at the box score, you see 1 catch, 14. 1 catch giving up someone else for 12. Another for 10, 8, 6, 5. One and one. So, again, the Bears' defense in terms of their coverage was really strong last night. And I think that's the reason why the Baltimore Ravens as a unit only had a pass rating of 68.1. They did have the 2 touchdowns, but again, we talked about that earlier, a lot of short fields. Only averaging 4.7 yards per completion, 81 yards, 17-27. So again, the Bears defense took care of business, especially their secondary unit. All right, guys, any final thoughts about the Bears defense before we head into our quick hit on special teams and wrap things up? Nick, I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah, so defense, we expect them to look good, and they did. They had some, short fields to work with and did the best they could. And you only expect them to get better when they actually have their stars in there. When I want to see some Leonard Floyd out there getting after the quarterback. But, yeah, the defense, these backups, they showed throughout training camp that they can run and, compete with the ones for the Bears. And, they did that with this Ravens team, the second, third string unit. So the defense looked really well.
I think my biggest takeaway, 2 things, pass rush was a little bit more on display last night than most would anticipate, so maybe keep an eye on it throughout preseason, see if it's a trend that can continue, or maybe it's like a one-hit wonder and things kind of tail off. Hopefully it's the first one, not the second one. And, of course, my final one's just going to be that this defense, we talked about at camp, the depth is there across the board. Even though we're kind of nitpicking maybe at inside linebacker, still a little concerned about the pass rush as a whole. Defensive line and the secondary, I think, are extremely deep, and that's just going to really make things better for this season, because no matter who they keep on this roster, you're going to have a lot of talent from the top down, which of course is going to benefit this team in the long run. But B, over to you. Final thoughts on defense.
Yeah, just a personal internal conflict that I have is, when Rashard Perriman drops that pass and hits Michael Joseph in the hands and DHC picks it off, I kind of wanted Michael Joseph to pick it off too, because he's my dark horse make team, so that would have been kind of cool. But I'll take DHC with the interception there, obviously. But coverage looks really, really strong. I expect that trend to continue throughout the rest of the preseason and the regular season, and it's going to have to, because I still personally have concerns about the pass rush. These were second and third stringers going out there, and I think we're going to see Kylie Fitz and Isaiah Irving out there against the ones come regular season time. They'll get in the rotation, I think. So how can they perform against higher competition? They were able to go out there and have a pretty good standing against some of the middle depth chart guys. They need to continue to get out there and get reps, and I need to be able to see them show that solid improvement like we've seen today against the ones come the end of preseason.
All right, guys, let's go over to special teams. And, usually we do quick hits, and in preseason, I think that's definitely fair to not discuss this in full. So I'm going to hand it to both of you guys first before I hand out mine. You can take this anywhere you want. You can talk about Parkey. You can talk about the punting battle. You can talk about the new kickoff rules, what you saw out of that. So, again, anything you want. I don't know why I gave you 3 choices, so I apologize in advance. So, honestly, whatever you want to talk about special teams, the floor is yours. I'm going to go to Nick here first.
Yeah, so something that I noticed out there that I haven't seen in a while is that on special teams, the Bears last night put two people on the gunners. And I was talking about that. I thought the Bears had a lot of success when they did that when Hester was back there returning, because usually those gunners are the first guys down the field. So now you have two guys blocking them. And I was just watching and see how that worked. Those gunners weren't really there. It was Ayers who was primarily the punt returner. He had time to do things. Obviously, maybe the coverage wasn't very well. There weren't lanes, but those gunners didn't get to him. And I like seeing that because, again, just reminiscent of the old Devin Hester days, that's exactly what they would do. Put two people on the gunners, give him some time to work, and, you know, one move and he's gone. So we'll probably see Tariq Cohen, obviously, in that role. But, yeah, I liked just seeing the two guys on the gunners.
Don't knock what we did in return game yesterday. Maybe it's our vantage point, and of course, most of the returns were far away from us, not really in front of our face. But he did have an average of 12.5 on six returns last night, 75 total punt return yards Ayers had, a long of 17, so it's not even entirely skewed. So yeah, he averaged, if you take that one, that 17 one, maybe out, still around 10 yards per return, which, hey, I'll take that. That's more field position than just calling a fair catch, so good call there with the double gunners, and I just want to say welcome back, Chris Tabor. I mean, that's a great touch to have, and of course, it was working last night, and it's still just basic installs. You're not going to show exactly how you're going to go down there and cover punts, but for going out there, averaging 12.5 yards per punt return, not too shabby. All right, B, over to you. What's your special team takeaway?
And one of the themes we had throughout the night was DeMarcus Ayers with errors. Had no errors in the punt return game, which was nice to see, so maybe he earns a spot there. No errors on kick returns, either DeMarcus Ayers or legitimate errors from either Taquan Mussel or Mr. Johnson there returning kicks. The kickoff rules were kind of interesting. I'm not really sure what to think about it. I guess I need to see more of it to fully grasp what's happening. But the not getting a head start on the running is different. I think that allows a little more time to come out of the end zone, at least kind of from what I could gauge anyway. I don't know if you guys thought the same thing, but I thought that was a little different.
Yeah, for me, I think the one that I take away from the kickoff rules is the no contact zone still, because you know, a lot of players are setting up their blocks now around the 25 to 30, and not a lot of contact until you get to that point in the field, which, of course, is extremely different than we saw in years past. But I think the end result last night wasn't entirely different than compared to, like, you know, previous year's kickoff. So, again, this has only been one game, not a lot of sample size, but it didn't seem like it changed things too much in terms of the end result. So we'll see how that kind of transpires as the preseason goes on, because I think this is something worth watching, just like the helmet rule. And I'll finish my special team's takeaway with the punting battle. We didn't get to see a lot of Ryan Winslow, primarily because of course, turnovers and the Bears needing to go for it in certain situations later on in the game. He only had one punt, but he did have 50 yards. But Pat O'Donnell, he did have four in the first half. He did average 57 yards per punt last night. He had one touchback, one ended up inside the 20. But I want to mention that touchback he had, that was right in front of us, guys, and it was about a yard in the end zone. So it was close to, you know, bouncing right before it and just kind of stopping right there. So it was either going to be a touchback or down to like the 2 to 3, and of course it was on the wrong end, but it was a very good effort there. It wasn't like he sailed it through the end zone. So for me, O'Donnell, Mr. Mega Punt, I'm hoping that this position battle kind of, you know, gets the most out of him. He's only on another 1 year deal, so I think he's really trying to prove himself. You know, averaging 57 yards a boot, it's a good way to do so. I will have to say a disclaimer. I'm pretty sure the wind was at his back most of the time as well, if I remember correctly last night. But, yeah, the punting battle is on. Hopefully we see more Ryan Winslow so we can get a more fair estimate between the four punts of O'Donnell and the one for Winslow. All right, guys, one final thing that we need to do before we sign off, and that's our two-minute warning, our first one of 2018. It feels nice to say that it's the two-minute warning. It's been quite a long time. And, B, I'm going to go to you first for your two-minute warning.
It don't take too much out of this game. First preseason, we get an extra one, per se, with this Hall of Fame game here. Offense, I mean, they didn't show a whole lot, which I was happy about. Don't want to give away the whole playbook in the first week of the preseason. And I think that trend's going to continue. I don't think that Matt Nagy's going to show too much throughout the preseason as we go along here. But I'm going to be interested to see what changes as far as how he handles things on the sideline. Something he talked about in his press conference last night was that communication was good. This and that were good. I just want to know what adjustments he's going to make I didn't really get to see him much on the sideline. I didn't know, you know, was he an active coach? Was he emotional? I didn't quite get to pay attention because his back was to us. But I'm interested to see that once we reach a broadcast point where we can watch the game on TV. I'll be interested to see what kind of coach he is on the sidelines because we didn't get to see it quite so much. I'm just going to be interested to know how he continues to adjust and learn, because this is not only an experience, a learning experience for all the players, but for him as well, and along with the coaching staff. So I'm going to be interested to see how he continues to learn, how he continues to adjust his coaching style throughout the rest of the preseason, get ready for the regular season.
All right, Nick, you're up. 2-minute warning.
You know, despite this being the Hall of Fame game and not seeing a majority of the starters, it was great that football was back. We got to see the Bears finally playing a game. Didn't mean anything, but it was great to see. I just want to continue to see these young guys who showed some things, like Kylie Fitz, Isaiah Irving, just go out and show throughout the preseason, earn that playing time throughout the regular season, because this is the time for these younger guys to really take the most out of each opportunity, just so they can solidify their spot on the roster or anything like that. But it was great to have football back. The emotions there were great, just because Brian Urlacher and this, you know, entire weekend. That's why we're here, Brian Urlacher. So it was great to have it. And, you know, second preseason game, we'll see more of those stars. It'll be, I think, a little bit more competitive. We'll see more of that offense. Hopefully, you know, obviously guys like Keem Hicks, Leonard Floyd, those kind of guys. So it was great to have football back, but expect more to come, especially next week against the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'm going to take this entirely different here. I think we talked enough preseason football. I want to talk about our day. Number one, it was great driving all the way from, you know, the Chicagoland area all the way to Canton yesterday. Had a great lunch, had a great time at the game. But before the game, we got to meet a few fans. We met Matt Zenobia. I think that's how you would pronounce that name. So, Matt, I apologize if I butchered it. You're a listener of the show, so you know I don't get paid to pronounce names. On top of that, when we were talking to you when we first met, a little fan came up from watches on YouTube. His name's Joey. So, Joey, I want to thank you for reaching out to us. It was awesome that you wanted your picture taken with us three normal Bears fans, so that meant a lot for us. And then, of course, Jonathan and his dad. We got to talk to them outside the Hall of Fame for a while. Actually ended up that the line to get into the game met us, and somehow we got absorbed into the line, which was pretty cool. But no, we talked to, you know, Matt and John for about an hour and a half, and it was great getting to meet some fans of the show. You know, we got to do so at camp, but doing so in Canton, I mean, it's pretty cool just, you know, driving 6 hours and you meet people who don't even live in the Chicagoland area and they know you because of this show. So it was awesome to catch up with you. Great stories from both Jonathan and, well, his dad. Those were pretty interesting, but looking forward to the next time we get to see you. Hopefully it's this Saturday at the Enshrinement, but appreciate everyone who took the time to reach out. And lastly, I want to mention that those weren't like the only good conversations that we had yesterday. Within a 10-minute span, we talked to George McCaskey for a little bit. And for those wondering about Roquan, I'll just let you know, he said, quote unquote, you know, there's no need to worry. You know, he'll be fine. So from Mr. McCaskey's mouth to God's ears, Roquan will be fine here in Chicago. Who else did we talk to? We talked to Zach Miller a little bit. He's doing good. He's in good spirits. He said that, you know, after training camp, he should be good to go on the podcast. We're about 10 months overdue there, so hopefully that comes to fruition. And we had another one, but it's escaping me. Who was it?
Well, we had Nick and Noah later.
Nick and Noah, we met, two more fans have through the game, Nick and Noah. They're sitting behind us. They actually moved seats, so it's kind of ironic that we got to meet them. And, of course, we talked to Trubisky's dad as well last night. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of meeting of people yesterday, a lot of great conversations. Of course, when you're surrounded by fellow Bears fans, it's always a great time. But, no, it was really neat within 30 minutes to talk to Trubisky's dad, George McCaskey, and of course Zach Miller. So that was a really cool short period of time. And then of course meeting all the fans, Nick, Noah, Joey, Jonathan, and Matt last night, and Jonathan's dad. So I appreciate you guys taking the time and, you know, all the kind words you have to say about this podcast. You know, it really means a lot to all of us. When we started this podcast a few years ago, never would have imagined that anything like that would have happened. So thank you guys all very much. I think I went over my time for that 2-minute warning, but that's okay. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Bears Brothers Podcast. And our first postgame show of the season comes to a close. Again, the Bears lost 16-17, but the score doesn't matter. The end result doesn't matter. What matters is we got to see a lot of depth from this Bears on both sides of the ball. Offense a little bit more shaky. Defense definitely looks like it has quality depth behind the starters. But this is it. We're going to see hopefully some more of those starters next week against the Bengals. And, of course, we'll talk to you before then. But before we do, we need to go talk to Mr. Brian Urlacher. No, I wish we can talk to him. But we're going to go see him down in the enshrinement on Saturday, watch him get inducted, listen to his speech. So we're excited for that. So we'll be down in Canton for a few days. But afterwards, we're actually going to be driving overnight from Canton all the way back to Bourbonnais to give you another camp report on Sunday. So we're not slowing down here. But we'll talk to you soon. And until then, bear down, Chicago.